Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So you could just see
600,000, deducted.
Yeah, you're looking at it.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor." Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. Mm. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me. Show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors with these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the dough. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the dough? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
they'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarion. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarion took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarion, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
As the sun rises over the Arabian Sea on the coastal city of Mumbai, the day is beginning for the 10 million people who live in the crowded city slums. The Hegre family lives in the Kalaba slum, in this tiny 10 by 10 foot concrete room. The 60 neighbors who live on their small lane all share just four toilets and this small room for bathing. The Hegres' three daughters, six-year-old twins Anisha and Tanisha, and 12-year-old big sister Anchal, are up early getting ready for school. Their mother, Parvati, helps get the girls and her husband, Rajesh, out the door. After their dad drops the girls off at school, he heads to his job at a security company where he earns about $200 a month. Then Parvati cleans their house, makes lunch and dinner, and performs her daily prayers. Then the most important task of all, she collects the next day's supply of water. In this slum, water only flows during a two-hour window, just once a day.
I felt that you can't come to India without experiencing what we've all heard about the poverty, but I also wanted to frame that story in such a way that it represented the truth of the people.
Anchal,
yeah.
I think this is so wonderful that you're giving me the tour guide. You speak English so well. So it wasn't just people living in slums, eating out of the trash piles and not having a place to defecate and all the stuff that comes with being extremely, extremely poor. But for me, every story is about the heart of the people. And so what is the heart of the people? How do you find a story that shows somebody who is living a life of sparseness, of poverty, but also still has the heart? Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. Great. All right, we're going here?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Showers of blessings. Oh, thank you.
Namaste.
Thank you, family. Thank you. I have to tell you, when I stepped in the door, I was thinking, okay, where is the house? Okay, where's the rest of the house? And then I realized I was already in it.
All right, everybody quiet, please.
Okay, I wanted to start off by just saying thank you for allowing me into your home. How long have you lived in this home?
Living for 33 years.
33
years?
Yeah. You don't look 33 years old, but you've lived here your whole life?
Yeah.
So your family was here before?
Yeah, my family is also here.
In this space?
This space.
And this is the entire space. The entire family lives and sleeps in this space.
Mm.
One, two, three, four, five of you sleep in this room.
This room.
You eat in this room. You play in this room. You share family time together in this room, which is from here to here. The five of you. Okay. This may be an obvious question, and I don't mean to be offensive, but does it ever feel crowded? Does it feel crowded?
No.
It doesn't feel crowded.
No, we just manage it. We have a habit of sleeping because we don't feel anything.
You don't feel anything?
Yeah.
And how do you do it? I mean, how do you physically do it?
I sleep in that corner.
Where I am right now?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And she sleeps over here, my mother over here, my another sister over here, and my father over here.
Okay. All right. Would you say this is this a hard life? Is it difficult?
Yes, ma'am.
It is. Yeah. And tell me what's the most difficult thing about it.
Difficult work, tell us that my mother work, my family will not do it.
Means he has a problem at that he cannot manage his salary enough for four people.
Yeah. This was an arranged marriage, right?
Yeah.
Was it arranged marriage?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it turn into a love marriage?
After 1 year, I love it.
After 1 year, you love it. Is he a good partner?
Yeah, very good partner.
Good partner.
Yeah.
Do you have a good life with him?
Yeah, very nice life.
I recently renovated this 100 square foot building into a cozy tiny home, and in this video I'll show you around and break down the cost along the way. So, let's get started. You enter the property from the side because the building is located in my garden, detached from the main house here in the east of England. I've lived in the house for 4 years, but it's currently undergoing some major renovations, so the tiny house gives me somewhere to live in the meantime. When the house is finished, I'll be renting it out, so this tiny space will serve as storage for my stuff, as I'll be moving away for a while. The extra tall fence can make the space feel darker, but will provide privacy to the tenants if ever I need to come and collect something. Now, you enter the tiny home via this lobby, which feels surprisingly spacious thanks to the wall-to-wall floor mat. When paired with these wall-hung shoe storage boxes, it really helps to maximize the space, and if they are any deeper, I'll be walking into them all the time. With the coat and key racks finishing off this space, and the total cost of everything in this room, from the floor mat, the shoe storage, and the coat rack was just £121. Not a bad start for this budget build, which I gave myself around £8,500 for. Now, as we take the long walk into the bathroom, it's worth mentioning that there was no running water in this building at all when the renovation started, so that was a significant extra cost. Now, of course, this is a small bathroom, but the shower feels incredibly spacious, and this wall was actually moved back in order to achieve this, which allows for a much more relaxing shower for someone as tall as me, and much more legroom when using the loo. The cost of this room was just over £1,100 in materials and £4,000 in labour, for a total of £5,124, which is where the majority of the budget for this entire renovation went. But you may have noticed there's no sink, which means washing your hands in the kitchen. A small space calls for a small kitchen, and that's exactly what I've done here. But despite that, there's still plenty of room to store, prep, and cook food at home. There's no oven in here, but I rarely use one anyway, and this 4-burner cooktop is more than enough to cook all of my meals, and the microwave is great for reheating any leftovers.
The angled extractor fan is compact, which allows me to see while I'm cooking, whilst the smaller fridge allows room on top and down the sides to store more things. Now, I think upgrading this toaster to an air fryer would be a huge upgrade for this kitchen, but I want to know what you think, so let me know in the comments below what you think would be the biggest upgrade to this kitchen. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention that these two walls are magnetic whiteboards, which I use all the time to make notes, plan my days, and make lists of things I need to do. To heat the space, I use this electric radiator because I didn't want to run any gas lines into the property, as that would have massively increased cost. As for keeping it cool, I just have to open the window and the door and the place will cool down within minutes. The cost of this kitchen is a little more complicated because I had to work up on Splashback already from a different project. I also got a few things from Facebook Marketplace to help keep the cost down, such as the cooktop, extractor fan, and even the tap. In total though, it cost me just under £1,300. And if you added a little bit more for the bits I got for free, you could look to spend around £1,700 in order to achieve a similar look. Finishing off the kitchen, I have this floor-to-ceiling cupboard, which stores the majority of my possessions. Paring down from a three-bed house to a seven-shelf cupboard did take some time, but it was something I was going to need to do anyway before the end of the year when I move away. And now we get to where I spend most of my days, the office. I wanted this area to feel more luxurious and professional, as I knew I'd be spending the majority of my time here, as a software engineer during the day and a wannabe YouTuber at night. So that's why I chose to make the desk out of a piece of solid oak from an old dining table which I found on Facebook Marketplace, which, when combined with the sit-stand desk frame, gives a lot of flexibility when working. The dual monitors are mounted to this stand, which looks much cleaner than just keeping them both on the desk, and more importantly, it provides a lot more space for everything else. This space will be getting even cleaner soon too, as this PC has just been replaced by my new personal laptop, which is a significant upgrade over my 12-year-old PC. And the reason I could afford this upgrade is because of you. By watching my previous video and subscribing, I managed to unlock monetization. And with that first video pay slip, I upgraded my setup in order to make better videos. So if you have enjoyed this video so far, please consider subscribing, pressing the bell icon, and why not like the video while you're down there too. It's really helping the channel a lot in these early days. Thank you. As for the cost of everything in this office, I spent just £301. Now, I know what a lot of you are thinking. Why did I use such a dark color in this tiny space? And look, I get it. This was the first space I ever designed myself from start to finish. And I learned a lot about interior design along the way. However, even after living in here for 6 months, I still absolutely love this blue. It may not be for everybody, but for me, it works. And it's never made the space feel claustrophobic at all. If I'm not out and about, this is where I spend most of my evenings. And whilst I don't use the sofa in this mode too much, when it's set up as a recliner, it becomes a perfect hangout space for relaxing, playing games, and watching TV. Speaking of, I have this 49-inch LG TV mounted to the wall, which may seem like it's at a terrible viewing angle, but it is actually on this extendable mount, so the entire TV pulls out and rotates 90 degrees, so that you can see it while sitting on the sofa. In fact, you can rotate this TV any way you like, so you can watch TV whilst cooking, washing up, or even on the toilet. The wall-mounted PS4 behind the TV ensured that minimal space was used, whilst allowing me to be always just a click of a button away from jumping into some games. To transform this space into a bedroom, I simply have to pull out the sofa, set up the legs, and lay the back on the floor. This gives me about a small double bed in total. I fit. Right? So how much did this all cost? Well, I came into this with a budget of £8,500, and looking back at the kitchen, bathroom, and everything else we've seen so far, they all came to a total of just under £6,700. And when you add in the near £1,200 for the living room section, the total so far comes to £7,870. And that leaves just the miscellaneous section, which includes things like the fencing, electrics, and anything else that didn't naturally fit into any of the other categories. And in total, that came to just under £2,400, leading to a grand total of £10,241. I'll admit it's a little bit over budget, but by doing the work myself, I help keep that cost from getting even more out of control. So that leaves one more question. Was it worth it? Well, I've actually lived here now for 6 months, and I'm really enjoying being in this space. But besides being just somewhere for me to live whilst the house gets renovated, I actually had the whole house valuated before and after I did this renovation, and the number surprised me. For what cost me £10,000 to renovate, it added £30,000 of value to the house, which was far more than I ever expected. I thought maybe I'd get the money that I invested into it back, but to see that it tripled my investment blew my mind. There are some links in the description below to a lot of the products you've seen throughout this video. And if you want to actually see me transform this space from start to finish, then click right here or here to see that video, because not everything went to plan. And with that, please consider liking the video, subscribing to the channel if you're new around here, and I will see you next time.
Okay, this morning, our live stream podcast is titled Homeless Checkmate, Homeless Checkmate. And one of the reasons, matter of fact, the primary reason why I suggest that people that are interested in tiny homes and sustainable and affordable living, pay attention to geography, and I think the best place to go tiny, if you like tiny houses, and tiny houses for the sake of affordable living, or living in a, what I call a budget home, it needs to be in a rural area. Now, I've given that several times, and that's why I titled this podcast today, Homeless Checkmate. Because if you look at the chessboard has 67 squares. Now, let's say that chessboard represents the landscape of the United States of America, all 50 states, including Alaska and Hawaii. 67 squares. 86% of the population lives on, 86% of 330 million people live on just 3% of the available landmass. Now, let's go back to the chessboard. 3% of 67 squares is 2 squares. So in the United States, you got 86% of the population crammed into just those 2 squares. The remaining 14%, okay, are scattered sparsely throughout the remaining 65 squares. So when it comes to homelessness, the easiest place to go homeless is in that 2% where it is overcrowded and overregulated. Now, let me give an example of this. I ran across a story this morning, and it's online. I got it on Google, my Google News feed, and I'll read it. It says Parker administration, and this takes place in the city of Philadelphia. The Parker administration cancels planned tiny house village. Okay, so I'm gonna read this article. But this is news fresh today. Sanctuary Village officials tell Axos, the mayor, that Mayor Cheryl Parker's administration has pulled the plug on a project to provide tiny houses for those experiencing homelessness. All right. Once again, now Mayor Cheryl Parker is the current mayor of the town of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia is one of the largest cities in the United States. There are 10 cities in the United States that have a population. Now, let's look at the landscape, because this is very important. That's why I'm calling this Homeless Checkmate. You have 108,000 towns in the United States. towns ranging from populations of just one person to as many as over 9 million people in New York City. But only 10 of those 108,000 towns have a population of a million or more, and Philadelphia is one of them. So Mayor Cheryl Parker, who's the current mayor of Philadelphia, has pulled the plug on what would have been the first tiny house village in the city of Philadelphia. Let's go on and read some more. Why it matters. Pivot Sheds, which is they're an outdoor structure company. Let's see, why it matters. Pivot Sheds laid on how the new Parker administration, because she's a new mayor, is distancing itself from the policies of the former mayor, Jim Kenney. So apparently former mayor Jim Kenney was the one that put this idea out there. All right. State of play. The city this month, City of Philadelphia, informed the nonprofit Sanctuary Village. Now, here's another player. Sanctuary Village, which has their own website and social media visibility. Go check them out. Sanctuary Village, okay, which was selected in 2021 to build the city's first ever tiny house community in Northeast Philadelphia. That project would not move forward. The group's board president, Kathy Farrell, tells Axis. The mayor does not want to pursue the project. Farrell recalled acting city solicitor Renee Garcia telling her on the phone. The other side, this is an ongoing legal matter that we cannot comment on, Parker spokesman Joe Grass tells Axios, and Axios is a news agency. A spokesperson for council member Mike Driscoll, whose 6th district is where the tiny village was planned, also declined to comment. See, this is one of the reasons why, this is just me. This is just me. I do not buy anything that has a population over, to be honest about it, over 1,000 people. Because the bigger the population, the more politics involved, the more threatening you appear to be, and you got too many, I mean, you got to deal with the unions, the politicians, even other nonprofits. Because imagine if homeless people became self-sufficient in their own tiny homes, then that's a threat for nonprofits, some nonprofits, not all. For them, they might feel, well, you know what, we might have to close our shelter down, and then there goes their payroll and livelihood. Atlanta's mayor, basically, he's happy that he got a container tiny house thing for the homeless in, but where the ball's going, people, is like the Freedom Georgia Initiative. It's going to take private individuals, including people that might be homeless or on the threat of homelessness, getting together and going private and buying your own piece of land, and that way you set things up the way you want to set up, and you don't have to worry about a bureaucracy. You don't have to worry about politicians. You don't have to worry about unions, none of that. Anyway, going back on what's happening in Philly here with the homeless. So anyway, flashback. The previous mayor's mayoral administration pledged to build 2 tiny house communities in late 2020. In an agreement with activists, see now here, you got activists. See, when there's a new sheriff in town, and in case new sheriff in town is a new mayor, it's a whole new ball game. All right, so the agreement with the activists was to end the months-long homeless encampment on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. So what was planned? Sanctuary Village planned to build as many as 28 units measuring 12 by 8. Now, this is one of the sweet spots that I've discovered globally. If you look at housing on a global level, 12 by 8 feet, which is 98 square feet, and that's why I played at the beginning of this podcast. I've been playing for the last week to start the podcast off. The family in India, family of five, live in 100 square feet. The guy in England, 100 square feet. Anything over 100 square feet, and I know this might be a shock to you people that live in the United States and some other Western countries. Anything over 100 square feet, you may as well consider that luxury living. It's luxury living. But people who need the basics, going back to that family in Mumbai, India, that Oprah interviewed, 100 square feet, 96 square feet, that is the housing sweet spot. Anything over that is considered luxury on a global level. And I already know people in the peanut gallery talking about, well, I can't live in 100 square feet. Some people can't even live in 500 square feet. They might think that's too small. But that's why a lot of people are going broke. Anyway, let me go back to this article here. It's online. The project would have created rent-free transitional housing for women ages 55 and up with social services and transportation provided. See, women in Australia got a problem too with this. Ladies, single parents, including single fathers and whatnot, if you want a sustainable rent-free solution, put your pennies together, put your nickels and quarters together, buy some land, take some classes, because we're going to be offering classes on this. We are offering classes on this. Build your own debt-free structure like the Amish and the Mennonites and others are doing. Don't wait on government. Now, this has happened in Philadelphia, the story that I'm reading right now. Now, I'm skipping ahead on this article. In the city of Philadelphia, has a poverty rate of 21.7. Now, I'm going to come back to that in a minute because, let's see. Homelessness in Philadelphia rose for the second year in a row in 2023. There are 4,700 people without housing in Philadelphia. Now, that's what they've recorded. They're not counting the people that are couch surfing or living in somebody's garage temporarily, or sleeping on the floor somewhere. All right. So the poverty rate in Philadelphia is 21.7%. Behind the scenes, it says Sanctuary Village says it had already sunk at least $200,000 into the pilot project, which was supposed to break ground last year. Farrell says the timeline for more than $1 million in the project kept the project from getting pushed back as the nonprofit ironed out details with the Kennedy administration. See, people, that's why I play Solar Cabin. I haven't played it today. You can go out here solo on your check if you get some type of check from the government or whatever. Or get together with some friends, and build your own community and have it done legally. Because right now, in this article, we can see in the city of Philadelphia, you have the previous mayor administration, what they had planned is not getting done. The new administration has come into play, and there's other players in this. The current mayor of Philadelphia, Mayor Cheryl Parker, they put the kibosh on these two tiny out villages. If you're homeless and of sound mind, or you're in the process of being evicted or foreclosed on, if you got a housing situation that you're struggling to pay, it's best to get together with other people. Now, this is just my opinion. Because me personally, I don't. That's why I don't even deal with government no more than necessary. I'll pay my taxes. That's necessary. I don't want no water from the city. I don't take municipal water. I don't take municipal power. Because I know how to set all that stuff up myself. Now, it does make sense for cities to get into the tiny house business. Because that's where the ball is and that's where the ball is going. It could bring in a lot of revenue, but it's still in the pioneer phase. So that's why I suggest to people that you know, particularly from an entrepreneurial standpoint, find yourself a small, like I said, the United States has got 108,000 towns, with new towns popping up every week, maybe about 5 to 7 popping up every week. Go start your own town or village, whatever you want to call it. Because, like I say, 86% of it, that's why we call this homeless chest. Now, before I go to the phone lines here, and let's relate this to what's happening in Philadelphia and other urban areas. Looking at the chessboard, 67 squares, 86% live on just 2 squares. All right, 14% is spread out among 65 squares. Now, let's look at the chess game. All right, at the start of a game, all right, and the white piece usually moves first, they have 20 moves, 20 possible moves. They can only make one move at a time, but they have 20 possible moves to make. That's just the start of the game. You have 16 possible pawn moves at the start of a game. And 4 knight moves at the start of a game. On the second move, there are 400 possibilities on where you can move. That's just on the second move. So as you move in a game of chess, you have more possibilities, you have more options. See, when you're crammed, this is why I'm calling today's podcast Homeless Chess. Because when you're crammed into just two squares on that 67 board, I mean square chessboard, which is just 3% of the landmass of the United States, when you're crammed in that those just two squares of 3%, you're not moving. It's all the people that are crammed into these little small areas that's what's causing homelessness. If you want to solve homelessness, in my opinion, the first thing you need to look at is your geography, where you're at. All right, now by the third move in on the chess game, there's anywhere between 5,362 possible chess moves to 8,902 possible moves you can make just on your third move. See, once you step outside of that 3%, or in the case of a chessboard, once you step outside of those two squares, your possibilities of having an affordable roof over your head with affordable or no utility bills, where you can have a comfortable living that is comfortable, safe, you have services provided by your community, not in the way that you might be thinking about. You can have your flat screen TV, your smartphones, all that's possible outside that 3%. But you've got to move outside of that. Now, by your fourth move in a game of chess, and this correlates to real life living, you have, on average, 742 possible moves to make. But that's not going to, like this Philadelphia story, the chances of homelessness getting eradicated in Philadelphia, matter of fact, let's take a look at, let's get on the scale right now. Largest cities in the United States. Okay. I want largest cities, not states. All right, largest I don't know why I put that in. All right. Cities. Let's just get down to the nitty-gritty on this now. All right, 10 largest cities. That's where we're going to go. Then we're going to go to the phone lines. 10 most populated cities in the United States. And we're going from number one, New York City. Los Angeles, California is number two. Chicago, Illinois is number three. Houston, Texas is number four. Phoenix, Arizona is number five. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania is number six. San Antonio, Texas is number seven. And San Diego, California is number eight. Okay, wait a minute. Let me round this out. Okay, well, Philadelphia is number six. Number six. So, now, let's just go up the totem pole on this. Right up the road from Philly is New York. They got a serious homeless problem in New York City. So my suggestion to the people that live in New York City is go to New York State. Go to the rural areas of New York State. Go to the towns that have a population, matter of fact, I'm going to tell you how I think. I'm going to demonstrate it right now, then we'll go to the phone lines. Smallest county in New York. I'm going to tell you what the Philadelphia people, this is what I would do with the Philadelphia. All right, you have Hamilton County, New York. Hamilton County, New York has a population, the whole county now, of 4,800 people, okay? And one of my basic rules is if you want to go small, if you want to go tiny, look for a tiny county by population, and then go look for a tiny town in that county. All right. Hamilton County is a county in the state of New York, population of 5,107, so they went up a little bit. All right, it's in upstate New York. All right, the total county population, once again, is 5,107. Once again, people, this is called homeless checkmate. Okay, now, then you go for communities. Okay, there are a number of towns, villages, and hamlets in Hamilton County, New York. So let's go to Benson, New York. Benson, New York has a population of 221 people. That's a place I would buy a land. Now, this is L.A. talking. I'm not talking about nobody else. You're wasting your time. And you can, once again, activists, you just saw what happened in Philadelphia. Y'all been scaring out there for over 10 years real easy. And look what happened. The new mayor pulled the plug. But if you go to Benson, New York, which Most people, even in New York City, have never even heard of Benson, New York. Let's go to another place in New York, a state. Inlet, New York. Now, they have a population of 1,352. Me, personally, I wouldn't but deal with it because anything over 1,000 people, I don't mess with. Okay, let's go to Long Lake, New York. Long Lake, New York has a population of 791. Not as small as I would like it, but I would consider it a place to buy some land and build a tiny house. And we're going to start teaching classes on this. Now, let's go to the village they have, because in Hamilton County, New York, which they have towns, they also have villages. So there's one village in Speckler, New York. Speckler, New York has a population of 406. I would visit there, see what kind of land I can buy. All right. Then there are other hamlets. Okay. So let's look at Higgins Bay, New York. Higgins Bay has, I'm looking for the population here. They don't even have a population listed. I'm going. The towns that have that are listed, they're on the radar, but they don't list the population. That typically means that they probably have less than 300 people. In a lot of these places, not all, but in a lot of these places, you don't even have to pull a building permit to build the house that you want to build. Now, on certain things like electricity, you might have to pull it, but you can build an off-the-grid structure, no problem. Now, I'm not saying this specifically for Higgins Bay, New York, but once again, on the landscape of the United States, there's 108,000 towns. And the politics of it, matter of fact, the activists, the people that were sleeping under the bridges, all this, unless you pull your money together, see, they don't mention this in these stories. You have to bank. That's why I played the Claude Anderson piece at the beginning of all of my podcasts. Because essentially, you have to, if you don't have an industry, matter of fact, let's go back to Pennsylvania. Okay. Let's go back to Pennsylvania. Okay, now, in Philadelphia, which is the largest city in the state of Pennsylvania, and it's the, you know, over a million people, it's the sixth largest city in the United States. Now, let's go back to Pennsylvania, and let's look at smallest counties in Pennsylvania. And I'm going to phone lines here soon. Okay. Smallest counties in Pennsylvania, you have Cameron County, population 5,000. Fulton County, borderline for me, population 15,000. Sullivan County, population 6,500. Let's go to Cameron County. Okay, Cameron, or hold it. Oh, they switched up on me. Wait a minute. Cameron County. All right, Cameron County in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has a population of 4,547 people. I absolutely love it. That's the countywide population. Now, people from Philadelphia, listen to closely what I'm putting down here, because I walk the talk on this one. Okay. Where I'm at, I do it in Florida. That's what, you know, I do it in Texas as well, and I do it in Oklahoma. All right, now, so they have a population of 4,500 people. Okay, now let's go to communities. All right. Now, in the county seat is Emporium, Pennsylvania. And Emporium has a population of 1,923 people. That's small, but not small enough for me. All right, so let's go to Driftwood, Pennsylvania. Okay. And at Driftwood, Pennsylvania, this is L.A.'s kind of town. This is a BIY Shacks kind of town. Has a population of 38 people. That's where I would go looking for some land. And build my own off-the-grid structure. And still have internet and all the modern convention, flat-screen TV, the whole nine yards right there. Population 38. Let's go to another. See, because when you're dealing with over a million people like they're doing in Philadelphia, once again, it's too bureaucratic. And when it's too bureaucratic, that means you got to have millions of dollars. Just my opinion. That's why, in my opinion, you will not wipe out homelessness in your major populated cities around the globe. There are too many people with their hands out. That's just my opinion. I'm just one person out of 8 billion people on the planet. Let's go. We're still in Pennsylvania. Let's go to Lumber, Pennsylvania. Now, that's a township in Cameron County, Pennsylvania. Lumber, they don't even list. There's no population listed. You know people are living there. And I'm looking at a picture of Lumber, and it's full of trees. Elk State Forest is, I guess that's why they call it Lumber, Pennsylvania. Oh, excuse me, they do have a population. I just found it. 178 people. Once again, that's why I'm calling this podcast Homeless Checkmate. You are checkmated if you live in a big urbanized area. You're New York, Philly, Dallas, Houston, Seattle, San Francisco, Orlando, Los Angeles, San Diego. You are checked. You are automatically checked and mated if you try to do this in a large town. If you try to get sustainable, you're going to have. Now, you might, depending on where you are, you might have to move 15 minutes out. Now, matter of fact, we're going to look at this right now. Lumber Township has a population of 178 people. Okay, so, and by the way, state of Pennsylvania in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, has the largest number of Amish people in the entire United States. They don't live in Philadelphia. They go to the rural counties of the same state. And you have Amish and Mennonite millionaires. All right, so let's go to Lumber, Pennsylvania, Lumber Township, and we want to, the distance to Philadelphia. Okay, let's look at, and we're going to go to the phone lines here. All right, it's a 4 hours and 41 minute drive. It's 5 hours away from Philadelphia for all practical purposes. Now, there are other towns that are closer. I just picked this up. Lumber Township. But in Lumber Township, population under 200 people, you know, you're not having to sleep under a bridge or a tent. You know, you're not scuffling. You're not struggling. And everything you need, I'm sure, is available, if not in Lumber, within a 60-mile radius of Lumber Township. Now, I'm sure that they're closer townships they are because you have Amish people all throughout the state of Pennsylvania. They just don't live in Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. Those are the two most populated, Pittsburgh, Harrisburg, and Philadelphia. Those are three towns that I do not recommend in the state of Philadelphia. Now, I used to hang out in Philly. I used to date a woman in Philly. I don't recommend living it. Nice place to visit. Don't live there. If you want affordable, sustainable living. So people that are in Philadelphia and you were looking for it, and there was only 28 people that, you know, they planned on putting in two tiny house villages. You know what? In 4 hours and 41 minutes, you can get in your car right now, go to Lumber or any other, once again, the guidelines. Look for a county that's got a small population, and then I say 15,000 people or less, and then look for a town that's got under 1,000 people. That's where to go hunting for land, because you'll be able to buy it by the acre. And what you will spend living in your car in Philadelphia or New York or any place like that, what you spend on living in your car or living under a bridge, you can take that same money and buy land or buy the building materials you need to build yourself a tiny house. That's why I play those videos the start of every podcast. Because if you don't do that, you're checked and made it in a lot of these large towns. I moved out of Chester. Checkmate. That's why I buy in rural areas exclusively. Is that the sole solution? No, but it's a good one. 347 area code, your mic is open.
Hello, ALA. This is me, Darryl from New York.
Good hearing from you, Darryl.
Yes, like you was saying, in the earlier, part of your show, it's going to mess up the shelter system. But also what it will mess up is the jail rate because, when people are homeless, sometimes, they get brushes with law enforcement. And they get brushes with
right.
The hospital, psychiatric help, other service that they depend on because, they don't have a source of income or the income is too low. So in order to keep, the law enforcement's working so the law enforcement can put their kids to college, pay their bills, and the doctors can treat, injuries from people being homeless. They have their income. So a lot of times they, it creates income for a lot of other type of, areas of employment, like, treating injuries from people being homeless, locking them up for crime that they commit, giving them medical treatment, whether it be mental, physical, for them being homeless. So it's a lot of, employment, they're giving them the run around, or we don't have anything, the jobs are taken up. So it creates a lot of income across the board. So, and dumb people don't want to lose their job. They don't want to become homeless. So they keep the homeless is going just to keep, make sure they have a job and so they won't become homeless. So it's a sad situation. But this is what they doing. And a lot of people, they don't see, what's being played, how it's being played, the reason why this is taking place,
Right. Darryl, I'm glad you brought up the jail part because basically most city agencies that you see, including the city jail, they're revenue centers for the city. The city makes money off the jail. The city makes money off of parking tickets. The city makes money off shelters that they provide. So this becomes a threat to the revenue infrastructure of a lot of these cities. Now, a lot of these little small little teeny-weeny towns that I've mentioned today, they don't even have a jail. That's another thing. So when I buy a piece, there might be a county jail somewhere. But in the towns that I select, typically there's not a town jail. All right? But I'm glad you brought up that point. So once
you
go looking for these places, go ahead, Darryl.
Okay, like in the summertime, like the people, they come out of jail, right? Because it's not cold.
Right.
In wintertime, you see an increase of the people going to jail because they have no place to live, right? So right. In the summertime, they'll live on the street. But the wintertime, the population increased. So we haven't seen the population, you know, people, the migrants over here in New York. A lot of them, some of them getting locked up, but they're not getting locked up like the regular locals, you know, the regular indigenous people of New York. They're not getting locked up on the like the regular New Yorkers. They're getting a little right. slap on the wrist, you know. But that's you know, we'll see how that's going to turn because they talk about changing the policies as far as letting them get away with things, you know.
Right. Right.
Yeah, you were saying L.A. just a moment ago?
Let's see. Wait, I'm trying to catch my thought because I was looking up another. Oh, yeah, piggybacking on what you say. So, yeah, look for places, look for communities where there is no city jail or town jail. And like I said, it might be a county jail, but look for places that don't because, like I say, it – and see, I wish they would put – matter of fact, let me play this Claude Anderson piece because he really breaks it down, and we'll come back to you, Dale, and the other callers.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told you that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry and put that pools in your money and hold that money and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money, major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money.
Okay. The second floor. Now, let's relate this to what has happened in Philadelphia in real time. The activists, you had no skin in the game. You just heard it from Claude Anderson said it. I didn't say it. If you have no money into the game, through political action committees, super PACs, and all that, if you don't have bankroll elections, you have no say-so. The plug that got pulled from the last administration to the new mayor of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, they didn't help bankroll the last mayor, and they didn't help the new mayor get elected. So therefore, the new mayor, who has marching orders from people who gave political contributions and large ones, she pulled the plug. Now, if you go to these little small towns I'm talking about, okay, and there are other people like, let's stick with Philadelphia for a moment, okay? You didn't practice group politics to keep the old mayor. You didn't help give him reelected, number one. You didn't bankroll the system for that. You didn't bankroll the new mayor. And then more than likely, if you didn't bankroll the new mayor, and this is something that you brought up, Daryl, is the sheriff's department, because the sheriff is elected too in towns like Philadelphia. So the sheriff can make – see, the mayors make millionaires out of people because they award contracts. But the sheriff makes millionaires out of people too. Somebody in the sheriff of Philadelphia, they can avoid – who's going to get the milk contract for the jailhouse? Who's going to be the contractor to supply the city jail with food, eggs, milk, trays? You know, they don't give them silverware. They give them what they call sports, so they won't be stabbing each other. in jail. You know,
yeah.
Sheets, linen. See, there's millions of dollars that goes, you know, that the sheriff has. So if you're not, but if they don't have anybody to lock up, or they don't have enough people to, if business is down, see, that's how they look at it. If business is down of locking up people, or you know what, Catholic Charity, well, I already said it, any charitable organization, Catholic Charity, Salvation Army, or any other nonprofit, if they don't have, if there's no homeless people that they can help, they don't have jobs.
Let me tell you the funny thing, Ellie. It's a precinct over there in Brooklyn, right? I spoke to some officers, and I was going to get like a little small contract to clean their weapons, so they said, yeah, just come on by. We need our weapons clean. This was like years ago, and I'm like, wow, it never took off because I was going to like doing a little corresponding course for like gunsmiths. And I was like, came across a part like in my training that like weapons cleaning, And I spoke to some officers about it because I used to talk to a lot of officers. I was like in close contact with them. And they said, yeah, just come on down. You can clean our weapons, they are, as you said, the sheriff's department or the police department, can make millionaires out of people. They can make, you can get some lucrative deals,
Right. And the tiny house company that that thought they were going to be doing business, they still might have a chance. They didn't bankroll the system. So before we go to the next phone line, let me go back to Claude Anderson.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry and put that pools in your money and hold that money. And practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so. You have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor. You buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth.
That's the food chain, people. The politicians. Now, the company, I'm going back to this before we go to our next caller. In Philadelphia, where the new mayor pulled the plug on the tiny house villages they came into agreement with the last mayor, but they pulled the plug on it. All right, let's see who's affected. Now, Century Village, and you can look this up online, Century Village, Philadelphia. They have a nice website and everything. Century Village, obviously they weren't bankrolling people. They didn't bankroll enough people. So Sanctuary Village is temporarily ass out. And they're supposed to be helping people who are ass out. Now they're ass out.
Yeah,
because
nobody told them how to play the game.
They didn't recognize the food chain.
Nobody taught them how to play the game. Yes.
Then you have, let's see, who else? Pivot Homes, P-I-V-O-T, Sheds. Look them up online, P-I-V-O-T, Sheds, Pivot Sheds. Look them up online. Now, they're the ones
that
were supposed to be supplying Pivot, P-I-V-O-T, Sheds.
Okay, like pool, Pivot, like, okay, Pivot, okay.
Sheds, look, they have their website, too. Apparently, they didn't play both sides of the table. Now, it's not over yet because there's some legal action going on, according to this article. Then, of course, the activists who are the front lines people, the pawns, well, obviously, well, you know, like in a game of chess, you know, some pawns get taken out early. So the activists who was marching and protesting and doing this, that, or the other, they've been checkmated. But like I say, if you go to other counties, now, in Pennsylvania has several counties. You know, now you have a homeless problem in some smaller places too. But it's easier, once again, avoid places, just in my opinion. If they got it, like in Pennsylvania, you got, here before you got to deal with. A tiny house village in Philadelphia. Now, it might not be a threat, but this is how some people might look at it as a threat. Number one, as Daryl pointed out, Mr. Jailman, the sheriff, the chief of police. Man, if they don't have any people to lock up, they got to lay off people. They already got a payroll to meet. Every 2 weeks, they got to meet a payroll. Then for the people who are retired from the police department or wherever in the state of Pennsylvania, I mean, in the city of Philadelphia, they got a pension fund check to meet every month. So if they're not locking
up
people. Yeah, go ahead.
See, the cops getting the cops going out on disability too because they have to make quotas. So if they can't make their quotas, and they're getting pressure put on them from their superiors. Their superiors, they're putting pressure on them. You're not making quotas. And a lot of times law enforcement, like the police officer, they have unlimited sick days. So what happens, so if they can't make their quotas because they don't have anybody locked up from a high population, they're targeting a certain population of people. Because you got a certain population of people, they target it. You know, they target certain population of people. So if they cannot make their quotas, everybody's being affected across the board. The doctors may make more money than the police because they treat the officers from depression, from job, the pressures of their job. And so one industry is going to grow and one other industry is going to shrink. You know, so that's how it is.
You're absolutely right. And the shelters, you know, probably the primary reason why a shelter might get closed now because there ain't nobody coming in that needs shelter. Okay. So, but
it's about
but
to get hot.
It's
about to get hot. So they're not gonna go into the shelter. It's hot. When it gets cold, then you're gonna see the influx of people going to shelter. But right now it's hot. No need to go into the shelter to protect
the people that are coming
elements.
In. Right. So
they're gonna sleep in the park. They're gonna sleep in the street. Yeah.
Right. So look, that Claude Anderson piece is literally the food chain. And we can also bring up the unions, the people who sell building supplies or whatever. But like in the state of Pennsylvania, this is so. Matter of fact, in the state of Pennsylvania and in the state of New York. Process people that you're going to meet community-wise, and there's a bunch of them in New York City. Matter of fact, let's, before I go to this next line here, and you guys can look along with me, let's type into our search engines Amish population by state, and let's see what comes back. Okay, list of states by Amish population. So what do we have here? All right, out of 50 states, there are 32 states with an Amish population. And number one, numero uno, the number one state with the most Amish people. These are people that have communities set up. They set up their own towns. They set up their own villages. As of 2023, in Pennsylvania, there are 89,796 Amish people in the state of Pennsylvania. Their population went up by 9%. Coming in at number two is Ohio, Indiana, Wisconsin. Coming in at number five is New York State. New York State has 23,285 Amish. Their population rose by 9.7%. They're in rural New York. They're in upstate New York. You're not going to see a horse and buggy in Manhattan or Brooklyn or Bronx, Staten Island, those places. You got over 100,000 people in New York. Go upstate where they are. That's where they're actually.
Ellie, they have an Amish store down in Lower Manhattan, down by Bowling Green, like by the that's like over there by like the statue of like the ferry. They have like an Amish store over there.
They have an Amish store, but those people live somewhere else. That's a smart thing. Because that's the business model that we can copy off the Amish. Matter of fact, I'm going to recommend a book that I have right now. I got to get through reading it. It's called Amish Enterprise, From Plows to Profit. So that Amish store that's located with, Darryl, where you say that's located again?
It's over by Bowling Green.
What borough is that?
That's in Lower Manhattan.
All right, Lower Manhattan. So that's a densely populated area of New York City. So they have they have the fifth largest. So basically, outlet is one of the outlets where the Amish can sell their goods, their products. You know, their quilts. What do they sell it, Darryl?
They sell stuff like on coffee because they buy the financial district. They over there buy like Greenwich Street by the Indian Museum, right there. Like they have a.
Okay. What's the name of? You know the name of it again?
I think it's by like close to Greenwich Street. It's the first stop in Manhattan.
It's a store. It's a store only.
They sell like coffee, pastries, stuff that like any other store would sell. Like I don't think they kind of like more like. Running along their line, they like more healthy type of stuff, like coffee, like brownies, things of that nature. That like danishes.
Okay, just look it up online. In Manhattan, there's at least there's an Amish market. There's an Amish market east. At 240 East 45th Street, there's a food emporium and Amish kitchen. There's Amish Fine Foods. They got listed New York. I'm glad you brought this to my attention.
Put by Bowling Green.
All right, you said Bowling Green or Golden Green?
Bowling, like a bowling alley, Bowling
okay,
Green.
Okay, let's see. Amish store, Bowling Green, right?
Green, like, yes.
Okay, Bowling Green. That could be Amish Market East. Amish Market, upper, is that Upper West Side?
No, that's lower Manhattan.
Amish Market, wait a minute. Amish Market, let me put in lower. Isn't that where Wall Street is?
Yes, it's like kind of like around that area. Okay, Wall Street is Lower Manhattan.
Okay. Hold on, I got a map here. I'm impressed. It's just you got three of them in New York. I mean Manhattan. Amish Market East, Amish Market on 9th Avenue, 8th Avenue, 21st Street, and urban Amish urban scooters. Oh, Bowling Green, I found it. Bowling Green Green Market. It's a farmer's market. Now, they don't live here, people. They just sell here, which is very smart. All right, well, that's an idea. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Just copy off of successful people who have done it. So thank you, Dale, for that. Hold on, I'm going to leave a line open here. Let's go to our next caller. 309 area code. Your mic is open. 309. Okay, yeah, he stepped away. Okay, we'll wait for him to come back. But 309 area code. Yeah, so well, he stepped away.
Yeah,
so,
I'm here.
And any, okay. Yeah, Chris, the mic is yours.
You know, just to bring up about the cops and stuff, you know, just me listening. You know, they get bonuses. And if they pull you over, and the reason they pull you over, they straight start the interrogation. And they don't care about really what they pulled you over for. They want to know what they don't know. And it's because if they can get you with a felony you got to look at why, you know, they're actually getting paid to find something wrong with you. If you get a felony, it's more money. It's mainly from the arrest, but then they also get paid to go to court.
Oh, yeah, and, yeah. It's a money machine. That's why I'm now calling it the food chain. There's money involved. Well, I mean, that's how, well, like I said, you got state government, and I'm not against government, but I'm just saying state government, local government, and federal government, all of them have profit centers that are all revolve around revenue. And
yeah.
So you're right. When people get pulled over, they have to take you in, give you a ticket, or what have you, there's revenue generated.
Exactly. And the thing is I went out and I started asking the police officers. I'm like, look, because I know in my city, 5 hours out of the day, they are harassing people that are on the street. And I got that from two different chiefs through two different terms. The numbers never changed. Now, they work a 10-hour shift, and for 5 hours of that, it is to cause people problems that are already having problems. And that is what their job is. Now, what I asked him was this. If I could get the people off street and they weren't there for you to harass, how much an hour is that worth to you to have a safer job? Well, then they don't even want to talk anymore. I'm like, come on. Is it worth a quarter? Is it worth a dollar? You know, if you're spending 5 hours doing this and you didn't have to do that now, what's that worth to you?
They lose
and
money.
They don't even want to talk. They're like, and I had one officer that told me he if I would have came to him and did that, he would have gave me at least a dollar to make his job safer. And that, you know, so that'd be $40 a week. Well, they're working 5 days, so they're getting 50 hours in. You know what I mean? When you look at that. So they're getting overtime. And then we're paying overtime for them to harass people. And they're doing fine. They're not wanting for nothing. Their family ain't needing for nothing, except for them needing a safer job. So it comes down to, if you want a safe community, you have to be part of that. You have to do something, not just sit here and go to work every day. Come home, go to the grocery store, go buy yourself something at the the Kohl's or wherever else, you know, Von Maur, ordering on Amazon. You know, every time you go to order something on Amazon, once you figure out, hey, you know what? I bet out of 25% of the planet, 1.8 billion people, they could use a dollar today. You know, one of them's going to have $2. You know,
and Chris,
people don't think of these things.
This is what I want to say, too. And a lot of times when the police approach them, you might have some people they approach and got a short fuse. And they're going to say, oh, they was being uncooperative. So this is another chance for them to make people uncooperative because people don't like to be questioned, you know. And they ask you that one question maybe four different ways. And then all of a sudden they say, oh, they was being loud. They was creating a scene, you know. And then this is another reason how they can bring them in too, you know. They started being evasive.
Oh,
they say, oh, they was being evasive, so we have to take you in to further investigate.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, when they start asking you, you know, do you have any bombs, hand grenades, guns, you know, they try to throw some jokes in there, like, you know, just like the hand grenades and stuff like that.
To piss you off.
Yes,
to piss you off.
But they're wanting you to hesitate. If you hesitate when they ask you a question like that, now they're going to initiate even more interrogation. They're watching every body language you move, everything you do. And the only thing you need to do when they pull you over is hand them the driver's license and the card and roll the window back up. That's truly what you should do. And I've got a company that makes the thing so you know, people can come home safe, your kids can make it home safe. But it's called the Pocket USA. If you get a hold of them and tell them that Hope, that you're a Hope supporter, they will print our logo and give you a planet Earth being held in a set of hands with a peace sign on it. And on your little Pocket USA, and you put your information in it. You have your kids put their information in. All they got to do is grab it and roll their window down just a little bit, stick it on the window, and roll the window back up. All the information is right there. They don't need to have no conversation whatsoever. They can come back, put the ticket in there, or have you sign it by slipping it through the window, and you sign it and stick it back out there, and they can stuff it in your little pouch and then go get back in their car.
So have they ever like disputed that piece of document you're talking about?
No, not at all. It's not the document. It's your documents. It's your driver's license,
okay,
your insurance card, and your registration.
And it's called a Hope.
It's called Pocket USA. So if
Pocket.
You look up Pocket USA, you'll find the company. And
okay.
I think it's pocketusa.com. And you tell the company,
okay,
that you're a Hope supporter. They'll also make a donation to our charity out of what you're buying.
Oh,
so when you buy the Pocket, yeah,
that's
POC, yeah, and then Hope, Hope.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, but that is definitely an item that every person needs. All your children need it, and it's something you can stick on your car on the outside. It has all the information that they need. And you don't have to worry about it anymore on talking to them, because the second you start conversating with them, you have initiated the interrogation. And their whole objective is to continue asking you questions, and they shouldn't even be asking you one when they ask
now,
you where
about,
you coming from.
How about if I'm walking down the street and I give them this piece of Pocket USA? I'm walking down the street and I just give them. Do they have like one that you can keep on you personally?
You ain't got to say another word to them. If that's your information, now they're going to say, "Can I search your bag?" You know what I mean? When you're walking down the street, it's a different situation, because now you're holding items and you're standing there. Well, the second that they start doing that, if they have no reason to be looking in your bag,
they have no reason to call a canine unit or something else to come and smell your bag. Once you hand them your documentation, you really don't have to talk to them anymore. Once they ask you for it, you are required to give them an ID. If you're driving, you're going to give them the registration and the insurance to the car. But once you do that, you do not have to talk to that officer again. Nothing. It does not do you any good. I promise you, it will not do you any justice to have a conversation thinking you're going to chit-chat that person, because they're not there to chit-chat.
Let me tell you a funny story. I was riding my motorcycle without license plate. This is like about 2000 and about 2014. I had like a Kawasaki 125. So when they pulled me over, I took off my helmet. They saw like grays. They saw me had like gray hair, and they thought I was young. You know, they see this little mini motorcycle. So, you know, like in New York, a lot of like the young people, you know, they ride, the dirt bikes and stuff like that. So I had like a mini motorcycle. A lot of these mini motorcycles look like scooters nowadays over here in New York. So once I took off my helmet, the cops got relaxed because they were looking for like, okay, we got a bus right here. This guy got a stolen motorcycle. But when they took it off, they said, okay, he don't fit the description of riding this motorcycle. So they kind of like, they took it down a notch. They said, where's your license plate? I said, I lost it. And then they went on their way. But if I was a younger person, they would have took me through the routine. Like that, you know, they would have checked me, see if I had guns on me, see if I had drugs on me. They would have like just did a whole rundown on me. But because they saw when I put up my helmet, I was like, somebody in my 50s, you know, my 40s. They got relaxed. They said, oh, just with your license plate. And they went about their business. But it was a group of them. You know, it was like, undercover cops dressed in regular plain clothes. It was it was like a car full of them, like about four of them in the car. So, so once they pull alongside of me like that, you know, and they was on their way jumping out. So once I took off my helmet, so I think I heard like the sirens or they didn't even have no sirens. They just kind of like pull up that, you know, ready for action, you know, like that. And once they saw I was an older guy, they just relaxed and asked me with my license plate, and then they went about their business. If I was young, it would have been a totally different story.
Okay. Let's see. Chris, you still there?
Yes, sir.
Let's see. What do you think about that? The story about what happened in Philadelphia with the tiny house projects.
You know, I think that for one, you know, the city council and everybody had voted for that to happen, and
see you later, bro.
I think it needs to be initiated. And all it would take is to get a few signatures, you know, from the community stating that they want to do it and have the land, if they've already had it designated, we go back and designate again and make it happen.
Right. Well, apparently now Philadelphia, because you got to look at, I don't know how many terms that mayor was in, the previous mayor, but, you know, that's 4 years right there. And the homeless problem didn't start in Philadelphia 4 years ago. It's been around for a while. Well, it's still a possibility because it's apparently there's some legal wranglings going on, so let's see what it ends up with.
I think, you know, one, get a hold of the old mayors. You know, we had, what was there, two different mayors that had started this thing? And then
the previous mayor had, according to the article, and I think I posted on our Facebook page, the previous mayor, it was a go. But the new mayor pulled the plug.
Yeah, see, that's the part. If it was a go and the new mayor pulled the plug, we need to speak to the new mayor. And I want to hear the reason that they done that. And the one part about that is this, is to hold accountability to an elected official. We have this ability, people. And the people of Philadelphia can do one thing for that elected official. They can do two things. You don't have to pay them for not doing their job. Okay? You can stop their pay and say, okay, until you address this problem, we're not paying you. Stop their pay.
Right.
Turn around and walk up to the door, stand united at the front door of City Hall, tell them they don't work for you no more. You have that ability to fire an elected official. Because if they don't do what you say they need to do, they work for you. So that city needs to stand strong and say, we ain't putting up with it no more. And you're going to do what I need you to do. And it's really time to start demanding and stop asking. That's the part that really bugging the crap out of me is we're afraid to go ask our government to do something for us when we should be demanding our government to do something for us.
Right.
We're the ones that are hired. We elected them to do what we want them to do for us. And because they're not doing it, we're still paying them, and then we're letting them get even worse and make up laws to even screw us even worse. It makes no sense. You know, that's why I got, when I had Dr. White on, you know, on the radio, I made him commit. You know what I mean? When I had him right there, I'm like, will you commit to going out and building these things? Because if you'll go out and start fixing the problem, you're going to get hired. They're going to elect you because you're doing it whether you win or lose, but there's people winning. You know, that's going to show that. And he saw it, and he said yes. You know, that right there was a commitment because I wasn't asking really. I was like, are you willing? Because that's the other part that when I found out, you know, about our congressmen and our senators and all that, I asked them. I was like, man, will you guys support me on this? And they're like, Chris, I have to support you. If I don't, you can fire me. You know, they don't tell you that shit.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Chris, what's your radio show?
Dr. White was on here.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, but
he was on this radio show.
But yeah, but Chris, you have one at night, so tell him about the one you have.
Yeah,
at night.
Lone Wolf on Blog Talk Radio with Kyler Davenport, which I am a senior co-host, senior executive producer of that show. Kind of getting my feet wet, but I'm enjoying.
If I look at YouTube, Lone Wolf, would I find you?
I don't know. I don't know. I've never looked. If you go on Blog Talk and look up Lone Wolf, you know, there's over 5,000 episodes. It's been going for over 20 years.
Okay.
But it's at 6 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Central, 9 o'clock Eastern times when it starts. It's a two-hour show every night, Monday through Friday.
Okay. I'll check you out.
Now, there's a bunch of articles here on online. I'm reading one here. Philly reverses decision to build tiny houses for people experiencing homelessness. That's Let's see. And then there's oh, wait a minute.
Oh, I did. I was in a conversation last night, though, and we've got 20 acres in Florida, and more 20 acres coming.
Okay, I want to say something to y'all guys. I want to say something very important to y'all guys. Now, y'all talk about the woods, right? I'm a nature type of guy, and I'm curious about the wonders of the world, you know, the mysteries of the world. So now they talk about in the world thing, you know, like I have Native American ancestry. My father's an East Indian, my mother's an Indian from South Carolina, my great grandmother. So one day I was in the sixth grade. I remember it clearly. I saw Alex Haley Roots, and I said, "Mom, was our people slaves?" She said, "No, we was never slaves." She said, "My grandmother's an Indian, and when she got married to the blacks, the other Indians tried to execute them. So she had to run away with her my grandmother, which is one part of my great grandmother children." And but the thing what I'm getting at is Sasquatch, Bigfoot, you know. So they got this guy called How to Hunt. And then I watch other stories about the lumberjacks. When they find the footprints, they cover it up because they don't want them to be disturbed. They say, like, Bigfoot, Sasquatch are some of the original people of, you know, but they just live like, you know, hunters-gatherers. And so when we go out to these places, I'm thinking about encounters, you know. You know, the people, they, you know, this Sasquatch, the woods people, they're very athletic. So I'm thinking like, you know, would we encroach on the environment, you know, because you look at some of these places where the population is 38, like Driftwood, or you go to Lumberd, it's 178 population, or you go to some of these places where the population, like Benson, New York, it's only 220. When you go to these places like that, I wonder if the population is low because they don't, you know, they had like maybe some bad encounters with the people named like Sasquatch or a Bigfoot. I'm just wondering because a lot of people, they say, oh, we don't talk about that stuff. Or we don't like, you know, they don't like to mention it because, you know, they ain't comfortable talking about it. You know, even a number of people, they're not comfortable even talking about it. They say, yeah, we know them. We see them. They mind their business, we mind our business. So I'm just wondering, if we go to places like this, are we going to have encounters over? Have you ever heard of any encounters like that? You know, buying 20 acres someplace out in the rural or stuff like that, and, you know, all of a sudden got quiet, you know, you don't hear anything, you know? So I'm just curious, like, have y'all thought about that or it never crossed your mind, you know?
No, I haven't yet. And whatnot. Yeah, I was looking. I was looking at some of these. Trying to get more information on what's happening in Philadelphia.
I'm not afraid of Bigfoot. I'm not afraid of Sasquatch. I'm not afraid of them. You know, but I'm just wondering, like, you know, people moving out there. I'm wondering because the population is so small, maybe they are scared of these people.
Oh,
and
well,
they don't understand.
A lot of these smaller towns, they're not as remote as a lot of people think they are. It's, you know, like South Oklahoma, you know, those places out in Oklahoma, anywhere in the country, actually. You'd be amazed at some towns that, like, for instance, Zanesville, Ohio. Here's the ground zero. If you can find a town that's got, like, where the ground zero population is, like, 25,000 people and drive 10 or 15 minutes radius outside of that, you'll find a lot of affordable places. And matter of fact, I would say get a map of Walmart, where the Walmarts are, Walmarts and Dollar General stores and places like that, and that are outside of your, see, like New York City is a megapolis, but you know, if you can, well, like going back to Philadelphia, Lancaster County, matter of fact, which isn't that far from Philadelphia, you like say. Walmart started in Bentonville, Arkansas. So essentially, Walmarts, dollar stores, Dollar Generals, Harbor Freights, if you find them, typically within, it could be as little as 15 to 20 minutes, 15 to 20 miles to an hour radius, or actually maybe a 45-minute radius. Or 45 mile radius, you'll find plenty of like little towns that that you can find you know, affordable, you know, homes.
Yeah, I'm more curious about the hospital.
Like,
say,
when you get to a place like Philly or New York, because if you look at, I don't know if Philly has a subway system, but essentially in New York. A city, you essentially don't even need a car. So what
yeah,
you're paying for in a place
system.
Like, huh?
It does have a subway system.
Yeah,
because,
I know New York City does. Does
no,
Philly,
Philly
have
does
one?
Too, because, yeah, they do
I know
have,
they got a
streetcar
system.
Yeah, they have a commuting system, yeah. That it's
yeah.
about an hour and some change from Philly to New York. My instructor told me her name is
Fannie
McNeil.
Yeah, so
a lot of people
live in Philly and New York because you have just, if you live in the city proper, you have a lot of, I mean, you don't, for all practical purposes, you don't need a car. They have a pretty good public transportation system. And this is all before Uber and Lyft. I mean, plenty of taxi cabs, gypsy cabs, bus services that run around the clock, subway systems in New York. You know, a lot of people can walk to work in a lot of those places. But the more convenient you are to the downtown areas, that's the supply and demand. The prices go up. And, of
but
course,
LA,
the more
you know the funny thing?
You have, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Governor Hochul over New York, she got the state police out here. She got the National Guards out here patrolling like the subway system because there's been an increase of crime in the subway system. You know, people pushing people in front of the train, people shooting people on the train. So it's been an increase, you know, of the crime in New York. And some of them trying to say, you know, it's part of the migrant causing it, and then there's other people causing it. But they brought in the National Guards, and they brought in the state police to help with the NYPD, the regular police force, to make New York more safer.
Well, yeah. Well, like I say, the more people, because New York City, how many people live in New York City?
Say 8 million. They always say 8 million. So I haven't heard it went up to like 9 million, but I'm sure it's getting there.
Yeah, but yeah, so, man, first, let's
Google
look at that
it
real quick.
Right?
Yeah,
okay,
let's Google
it
real quick. Because the metro area is probably about 18 million, the metro area, but the city. And see, that you know, and people pay for services. Like the police department is a service. You know, and the policemen have bills to pay, so you got to pay them. You got benefits and all that. So,
what I think martial arts should be a major requirement in school. Self-defense should be a requirement to graduate like that. You know, from every grade up, self-defense, so people won't have to rely on like. Weapons like that, or they could defend themselves, or people would be hesitant to rob them, or people would be hesitant to try anything to harm somebody, because they know everybody in New York City knows how to defend themselves with self-defense, you know, some form of self-defense. And I think that should be a requirement in the education system or the school education system throughout the U.S., really. I think every school in the world really should have, you know, some type of self-defense program so we can move away from, you know, we can move to a peaceful society, you know, peaceful world, you know.
Right. Let me get some information out here on this Rikers Island. Rikers Island, which is, I guess, the main jail of New York City, has a current population, average population, of anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 people daily. The budget for Rikers Island is $8.7
billion. Wow. Incredible. That's a
You're
lot
right.
of moolah.
$8.7 billion. Oh, wait, hold on. Wait a minute. All right, what is the budget for Rikers Island? Hold on. What is the Rikers Island budget? Wait a minute.
I got to tell you something strange about Rikers Island. There's no more college entry requirements. It's not an age requirement anymore to get hired for a correction officer. For Rikers Island, before you need like a two-year degree, they waived that requirement. The city, certain agency, they don't have an age limit as long as you can perform the job. That, you know, because to become a correction officer, it's a drag thing. It's a trigger pull. You know, you have to pull with the right hand. You have to pull with the left finger, right and left finger.
Right.
It's a requirement. You run up and down the stairs. It's the obstacle course that you go through. And once you can pass out the background check, you can pass the obstacle course, which is then the physical. Hey, you're hired. Yeah, so they're desperate. They are very desperate. So I see in the near future they're going to drop the requirements for to be a regular police officer too. That, you know, as far as, you know, a two-year college education, maybe the age requirement, because, you know, I mean, you can make a lot of money doing IT. So, like, if you want to do IT, you want to become a CCP, Certified Cloud Practitioner, you just learn the computer. Everything's going, you know, this Amazon thing. The only thing you can't buy on Amazon right now is a wife, and you can order a doctor. But sooner or later, you could be order on Amazon, say, I want a husband, I want a wife, you know, or I need a doctor to come to me. But you can practically buy everything on Amazon. You can buy a house, a trailer house. You can buy I think because if we move it into the technology phase, who wants to make $100,000 with a dangerous job? You know, as becoming a police officer or becoming a correction officer, you know, like that. It's, you get a lot of overtime, but who wants to put themselves in harm's way when it's something that, you know, become a construction worker where you could do something sitting down by a computer and make $100,000, $200,000, maybe a half a million a year. You know, with the IT thing, because we move into the technology phase. That, you know, it's not going anywhere. You know, it's a blue ocean there.
Yeah. Chris, you still there? Go ahead, Daryl.
The population, I didn't find that yet for New York. I'm still looking.
Yeah, look it up for us real quick.
Population. Population. Of New York City.
For some reason, I always thought it was around 12 million.
In 2021, it's 8,468. That's in 2021. Let me see today. Okay, 2023. Okay. The past trend continues to reforecast population count to be 8,522,076 by 2023. If the past trend continues to reforecast the population count to be 8,522,076 by 2023. That's what it says. Now, see, that's not got the numbers on how many immigrants are coming into the country every day, because that number is about 5,000 to 6,000. And if you add 365 days at 5,000 to 6,000, and then come up with a number, and I think that's going to be your total.
Yeah, me personally, I think they should get Interpol involved. Interpol, you know, like I think they should get involved. But every continent, every country around the world, their population is decreasing. So so I wonder what you know, every population around the world, nobody wants to have babies anymore. It's too expensive. Nobody wants to do their part anymore. A lot of people is giving up. That, you know, they want to live their life, or whether it be the best one or the bad one, and that's it, you know. So I wonder if the population ever going to grow back, because Nigeria population is increasing. That's one about one country that the population is steady going up. We see the Amish population is increasing by 9%. Some Hispanic, basically Hispanics, they're family oriented. They believe in family. What I see over here in New York, with the construction sites, they're kind of like dominant when it comes to the construction. They're very dominant when it comes to the construction. And in some places too, it's bilingual. If you have like two languages, you have more job opportunity. Whether it be customer service, you have a lot of opportunities. It could be like at a hotel, certain department stores. If you're bilingual, you can talk English and you can speak Spanish. We see how it is on labels. I think the Asians and like a lot of Arabic, I think that's going to be the next thing, because on some labels you see like some type of Asian writing, or you see some type of Arabic. So you see four labels nowadays. You either see Arabic, some type of Asian, or Spanish, and English. So this is what it's telling us, like that. When you look at certain ingredients on products, these are the language. So they give us some type of indication how the population is going to cater to coming up in the future. I think it's probably going to be English and Spanish, and maybe some type of Asian, and then Arabic later on. But I have seen them labels popping up on products with them four languages.
All right. Well, we're in overtime right now, so we're going to wrap it up for today. But of course, we'll be coming in tomorrow. We'll be talking about our solutions, because we've taken a look at let me stress this too. The larger cities that need this type of housing, I guess one of the teammates on your team is somebody who's experienced at knowing how government works in your larger city. I think that was the missing piece with what's happening in Philadelphia, but we'll be following that, because that's the current thing.
Yeah, I actually have a team now that is an economic development council for a city, but now they're on this team to initiate things for other cities. Because everybody that's in this thing knows what it takes to get through the city. And we just were doing something in Friars Point, Mississippi, and we're changing their whole lives. Because
now, do you know the population of what you said, Friars Point, Mississippi?
Friars Point, there's about 850 people.
Now, that's a good town. And I never heard of Pryor's Point until you brought it up. But based on what you said, the population, and due to the fact that I never heard of it, those are good places to get stuff like this done.
Definitely. And having a model with cities that size and smaller, showing that they can be a powerhouse.
Right.
You know, when you're looking at that situation, we bring power.
Right.
We provide energy.
Well, you know what? In your largest cities, like a place like Philadelphia, they're going to one of the first questions they're going to ask, where else have you done this? Because they want to see, you know, your work. Because, you know, these bigger politicians have bigger egos. So prior to spawn, I'm glad you brought that up, Chris. The smaller cities that's a good. If you want to do the large cities, go do it with the smaller cities first.
Yes, and get those people to become a team. And I had a meeting yesterday with this team, and I mean, we've got people on this team that are the USDA for Mississippi. When you start looking at what these people do, not just what they're doing, you know, a lot of people have other things that they've done or that if they're in a city position. But these aren't necessarily elected officials that we've got in this thing. And what's funny is we have the elected officials in the meetings, but it's them working too. I'm actually seeing the city people get involved in this. And we have created an energy co-op, and we're partnering with Mississippi Power, and we're going to supply the grid with power. We're going to bring between $600 and $2 million a year into that community, and we're lowering all their power bills by 35%. So everybody's going to get a cheaper power bill, and you start putting a third more of your utility money into your livelihood. That breaks it down for the people that are living on $1 a day, $5.50 a day, $10 a day, $30 a day. And imagine, you know, being able to add an extra dollar to that dollar and doubling their efforts. And because the money that comes back into the community that we're putting back in, not just your savings that you're getting, the money we're putting back into the community, that's coming through the trust, and it's for impact, social impact, and it's to create more opportunities, more job training. So we're building houses. We're gonna do manufacturing. We've got 5 semis already. And trucks, the trailers, everything to start hauling things. And we're doing a car show in October. But they're also doing golf tournaments. And these are going across 5 different states, I believe, these golf tournaments. But these people are figuring out how to get other communities to pay attention to what they're doing. And this community did not have the funds coming in to be able to continue being a city because all they had was their water as a supply of money. And they were supplying a college, and they went up on the price of the water, and the college decided to get their water somewhere else. So it was a huge hit, and they couldn't even, you know, the city was trying to figure out, what are we going to do? Are we going to fold? And it wasn't that. It was a blind man in Chicago says, hey, man, have you heard from Melvin? I'm like, no. He's like, well, he's one of my college fraternity brothers. And he's supposed to be calling. Then I got the call. And this is a blind man telling this man in Mississippi that he can see something. And we've got some amazing things going on. And these people are from all over the country, too. So we have the people that of the Economic Development Council there, but then we have a team of people that's just as many people as they have, if not more. And here they are all bringing their talents to one thing to make something duplicatable. And kind of excited because it opened up the door. We have another one in Durant, Mississippi, that we're looking to do another power facility.
Okay.
And then there's another project in another place in Mississippi. And it all stems through the people that are connected. They got connected, that all come together. And but for them to know how to create an electrical co-op and watch it be formed and all the stuff and that is just amazing. And all
right.
I had to do is sit back and watch, just instigate and take off. You know what I mean? I just wanted to initiate something. But it is powerful, and it's and you can look it up on there's a group on Facebook. You can follow it. It's Friar's Point.
Okay.
What's that?
Can you spell it, Chris?
I believe it is F R I E R S.
You mean like sire, like in England, the sire, the dog sire, like?
Yeah, F as in Frank, Ralph.
Ralph. Okay.
Oh,
yes.
Like a bird. Okay.
And then I is in you, and then E-R-E, so Edward Robert Edward.
So that's Frank Robert, India.
Friar's
Edward
Point.
Robert.
There's Friar's Point, Mississippi. There's a joint group on here.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Thanks, Chris.
And let me
You're
look
welcome.
At huh? Friar's Point. Point, Mississippi. Okay, town of Mississippi. In Cahoma County. Let's see, Friars Point, population 896. I like that. That's where the ball's going. Places like that, you can get stuff done.
No, definitely can, because I watched the Economic Development Council pretty much say, we have said everything to you. We have given you everything. And we need to know yes or no. That's where it's at. So city,
right.
Make your vote. You know what you want to do. And they didn't have an economic development council. And that's always a thing. So one of the guy, Melvin, he created it. And
yeah, that's
another
thing I like about small towns, yeah. Because, like I say, when you get to, now, like Los Angeles, man, you got to have an experienced team to get through that place.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it can be done, I'm just saying, you know.
Right. Yeah, and it's not what you know, it's who you know when it comes to a city like
right.
that. And that's the best part about knowing some people. I'm connected in that big city. I'm connected in darn near every city with somebody.
Right.
That has done something, that means something. They're just not nobodies, you know. That's the other part. Because if you surround yourself with nobody, you'll always be one.
Right.
And I like to surround myself with somebody like you, you know, and Del Mar, because people that do things and you do something, you do this radio show every day, you know, I admire that.
Every day, you're right.
And you do it without commercials. You ain't been paid for doing this radio show. And you have gave 2 hours, basically 5 days a week of your time, the most valuable thing you have, for 10 plus years.
Yep. So, 2 hours a day. Some days we do less, but you know it usually runs too. But in any event,
you know,
it's
any event.
Go ahead, Chris.
No,
it's overtime
event. It's
now.
Like,
So it's almost one, so I'm going to knock it off for the day because we're over time. We'll see you guys. Have a good rest of the day.
All right. Gotcha.